Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Like a flame in the sky, flying over the island to my lover nearby. Flamingo, with your tropical hue, for it's you I rely on, and the love that is true. The wind sings a song to you as you go, a song that I hear below, the murmuring pond. Flamingo, when the sun meets the sea, say farewell to my lover and hasten to me.
This is the last word, Michael Lawson. We had a problem with our intro. I was told by a few people that the connection was not making it, and we need to start that intro over again. What you heard was a gentleman named Herb Jeffries. Herb Jeffries is unbelievable. He is someone that is, he made cool cool. And there's a story behind it, but I need to go back in and give you Flamingo, and I want to tell you the story again. Just listen to it one more time.
Like a flame in the sky, flying over the island to my lover nearby. Flamingo, with your tropical hue, for it's you I rely on, and the love that is true. flamingo when the sun meets the sea. Say farewell to my lover and hasten to me.
Following takes place between 3 p.m. and 6 p.m.
And today is May the 30th, 2013. I'm Michael Lawson, along with our ever new story man, Mr. David Adams. How are you, David?
Good evening, Michael. Always a pleasure, my friend.
We are trying to make it along here while Thomas takes his kids to the movie, but he said he will be here shortly. But I need to ask you, David, do you know, have you heard that song by Herb Jeffries before?
Yes, I have heard it, actually, Michael. It kind of took me back a bit there. Seems like my grandparents' era, but I've actually heard that song before.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, Duke Ellington and Count Basie are the ones that first introduced him. Now, this is an amazing story, and I told you the story, but tell me, what did you know? Explain to the listening audience out here what you did know about Herb Jeffries.
I know he was part of the big band era. You talk about Duke Ellington and Nat King Cole. He was part of the big band era. I honestly thought that he was just a light-skinned black man or a mulatto, as the term is often used for people of that pigmentation. But for the most part, there were a number of stories. He was a marquee kind of singer appeared in a number of motion pictures during that era. But like I said, I always thought that he was just a light-skinned black man or a mulatto.
Well, for the people out there, I can further give. I'm a little bit older than David, I saw him because he just died a couple of days ago. He was 100 years old.
Wow.
And I believe it was the 40s, late 30s, middle 40s. He appeared in, I believe, might have been 6 to 10 westerns where he was the singing cowboy. But he went as a colored, at that time, they turned to use, colored singing cowboy. And he was, it brought African Americans to the movies, because there was nobody in the movies at that time who had a leading role who was the marquee person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was the marquee person in films with whites who were below him. So I know this really would tear up these, it must have teared up those pointed heads, and these people today, they would go ballistic. Anyway, he was a black scene cowboy, nice-looking guy. I mean, gorgeous, tall guy. I mean, he was the perfect person for you to see, to represent, if he was representing anybody. But I want to play a clip. This is from A Colored Life, the Herb Jeffrey story. It's very short, but it explains a lot. Just listen to this.
I didn't set out to make history, but that's exactly what happened.
Cinema's original black hero, changing the face of the singing cowboy forever. He was discovered by Louis Armstrong and toured with greats like Duke Ellington. He opened doors for generations of African American performers. What you don't know about
Herb Jeffrey, tell about Herb Jeffrey.
My mother was Irish and my father was Sicilian. He was considered a shade too dark for the white band and a shade too light for the black band. So I said, I'm a Creole from New Orleans.
Herb Jeffries, unabashedly, was a creation of Hollywood.
I'm going to play a part. Darken me up.
A little makeup, a little Max Factor Egyptian bronze.
And he bought it. He had to establish himself as a black singer.
I expected him to be a black man, you know, really black, but he looked more Mexican or something like that.
No one ever accused Herb Jeffries of being black. Well, I have a right to do the pictures I did and call myself a colored performer, because that's what I am. Feels good when I walk down the street.
So, and Herb Jeffries said, hey, man, I'm making it in Hollywood. He made it in Hollywood because most of the people in Hollywood knew that he was not black. If the people who were going to the movies thought that he was, and he portrayed that. But he never said it, and he never pretended he was anything else. But because he was so dark, a lot of the people didn't want to, we're afraid, I don't know, you know, just like, you know, same thing on TV. David, right? Well, we got it today where, you can't be too dark to be on TV and be in a leading role. I mean, they're just getting over that right now. So
yeah,
what happened?
There's a lot of disparities in Hollywood when it comes to screen with color actors. You can look at the Oscars and see the volume of actors of African American, you know, descent who've actually won that award. And it's still a tremendous disproportionate number. So, yeah, you're saying that we just got over that. I don't think we've gotten completely over the hill with that.
No, well, you know what? I didn't mean to say that we're over it now, but it's just like, you mentioned it, in Hollywood acting, Denzel Washington played Malcolm X in the movies. In real life, Malcolm X was very fair, with red hair. But he played him, and that was the greatest role he ever played in his life. Then he comes and plays another movie where he's the crooked cop. He was the Academy Award, because they owed him. They owed him. But the problem is, it's the people that we have to play, and that's why Sidney Poitier broke that ice with Lilies of the Field and in Heat of the Night. And there's this problem. You can see it on television right now. you could, and that's one of the reasons why Lawrence Fishburne, who stars as Jack in Hannibal, I mean, it really was is an amazing. It's a great series. But he's leaving that series and going to ABC and making his own comedy show where he's the executive producer. Now, people don't leave a hit show. They don't leave a hit show. And if you saw the last part of Hannibal, we don't know if he's dead or alive. We don't know if any of the people are dead or alive. I mean, Hannibal just did his thing. But so I believe, this is what I'm hoping to believe, that if the show doesn't make it on ABC, he can come back as Jack. Because, you know, if you've been following the storyline, in the movie Hannibal, Will is the one who's almost killed by Hannibal, and then Jack comes and gets him a couple of years later to help him find Hannibal. Well, I believe they're going to do the opposite here. Jack is going to go away, and then Will is going to come back to him, ask him to come back to help find Hannibal. Well, that remains to be seen. But what I want to say is this: my father, who was a singer, used to sing in Cleveland, Ohio, with Scatman Crothers, knew Herb Jeffries, and I never met him. My mother was in the theatrical business when I was growing up, but this man had some voice, and I didn't get a lot of the. And matter of fact, what I'll do is I'll download some for the show next week. Because this man could sing. He had a deep voice. He was a singer. And he was cool. If you ever saw him in his act or in the film, he was the coolest person in the film. And we needed that. But there are so many distractions today where people are trying, are desperately trying to, it's like they came out of the closet. I mean, well, would you say so, David?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the fact that he was able to pull that off is just incredible. And now finding out years later that he was even African American, you know, it's just amazing. But you're right. Today, you have some of the same similar situations in television and big screen. Right. But this is a fascinating story about Jeffries.
Well, you know, the thing that to me, this could not happen today. It could Herb Jeffries and the Hollywood whatever could not pull this off today. But here's the key. He didn't mind being black. Because if we look down the line of the Sicilian, it's pretty close down there into the boot cause, you know, Africa, but North Africa. But he didn't mind it. And I would like, as a matter of fact, I'm going to do some more research on this to find out if he was ever really condemned by the other side. That did he go through any major problems with the white establishment? And what he says in his short short storyline there is that he didn't, because most of them knew who he was. But today's story, the things that are happening to African Americans today is blatant. It's just blatant. They are doing this now. I say they. We all know who they are. African Americans today are under more scrutiny than back in the 70s and possibly the middle 60s. They are called, it's like coming out of the closet. These pointed heads white sheets have come out of the closet. And all they do is try, oh, we're not talking about you. We're talking about him over there or her over there, and especially Obama in the White House, because he has taken our country from us. You've heard that line. Obama has taken our country. We want our country back. Back from what? 6,000 was the Dow Jones. 6,000 and change was the Dow Jones when Barack Obama took office. Every one of these poisonous fatheads from Rush Limbaugh, Bill O'Reilly, Hannity, Levin, all of them said our country won't last if he's re-elected. The Dow Jones now is over 16,000. That has never occurred. A spread like that has never occurred in this economy or the world's economy in less than 20 years. As we look at the depression when Roosevelt came in, and then we look at the how this country and the world, because the Dow Jones just isn't the United States. It's the world. Dow Jones is not just companies, five companies that steel and motor companies and oil companies. It's not just the United States. That's worldwide. And to go from 6,000 to 16,000 in 6 years. And remember, they were losing 850,000 jobs a month when he came in office. And now, I believe it's over 5 million jobs, or 6 million jobs he's created. 50 straight months of job creation. But that has to stop them. That has not stopped them. Just listen to what these lying people. I mean, it's just amazing how people who come into this country who have never been here before claim that someone is taking their country away from them. How is that even remotely close to what things are? How is that even remotely close? It's not. And all they do is want to tell you that you can't vote. We don't want you to vote. We don't want you to vote because the more you vote, the less they are in charge. But remember, the more you vote, the less they control you. Now, I just want to play something for you, Holder. I hear you. Just stay right there. And David, I just want you to listen to this short clip here. This is a young lady named Heather Ellis, who is possibly, she's a high school teacher, and possibly going to jail for 15 years for cutting in line, in water. Just listen.
The arrest of a young black woman nearly 3 years ago continues to stir strong feelings in a small Missouri community. The felony trial of Heather Ellis will take place in Kenneth, located about 110 miles north of Memphis, November 18th. Fox 13's Les Smith traveled to Kenneth, where for the first time, Ellis' family is telling their side of the story. Les?
Well, you know, it's a spur-of-the-moment move that many of us can readily admit we've done in our lifetime. You go shopping with a partner or a relative, and you try to jump in with whomever manages to find the shortest line at all the checkouts. Heather Ellis thought that was going to be pretty simple, too. She just didn't know the price she'd have to pay. Except for its warm recognition as the birthplace of entertainer Sheryl Crow, the small, rural, southeast Missouri community of Kennett in Dunklin County doesn't immediately strike a visitor as a place where big dreams flourish. But the lack of success stories produced in town, especially among its mere 9% African-American population, didn't seem to stop another native daughter of Kennett from having her own sights set high. Heather Renee Ellis was a young woman well on the scholastic path to a career in her chosen field of medicine.
She had been taught to love, to do the right thing, to strive academically as well as spiritually.
But nearly three agonizing years ago, the on-break college student's simple late-night trip with her 15-year-old cousin to pick up some items for her mother at the local Walmart set in motion what could prove to be, for Heather Ellis, the eventual death of her dream.
It really hurts really bad. And it's been going on 3 years, and it's still like yesterday.
That injustice could raise his head in such a overt way. In which it has affected her life.
In January 2007, according to the first of two affidavits produced by Dunklin County authorities, Ellis and her cousin separately entered adjoining checkout lines. Ellis decided to move and join her cousin at the front of the other line because it was moving faster. But a store employee accused Ellis of cutting ahead of other customers. A shift manager notified the store security guard, an off-duty Kenneth police officer.
He got on his radio because they kept saying she cut line. Not saying that my son is in line and they're together. And they're trying to explain, no, we're together. No, you cut line.
And it's here where the information contained in the probable cause affidavit submitted by one of the five Kenneth police officers called to the scene and the account of what happened Ellis and her family allege are presented in sharp contrast. In the Ellis version, she was shoved by another customer, had her items pushed aside by the clerk, and then was shortchanged when she finally was checked out. The police affidavit alleges, at numerous times, Ellis became belligerent, loud, abusive, and cursing when she was told to leave the store by the assistant manager. Summoned by a frantic call from her son as the pair walked out to the parking lot, Blackman says she arrived in time to witness her niece being brutalized by police during attempts to place her in a squad car.
She said, "I'm not resisting." She was screaming and crying, and they took her... They took her head, and he banged it on the back of that... on the back of that police car, and she said, "I'm not resisting, please stop."
Blackman, who has worked for 11 years as a probation officer in town, knew at least one of the officers, and she alleges she asked why her niece was receiving such rough treatment.
I said, "I cannot believe what I just saw." I said, "What is going on?" And all he could say was, "She cussed."
Ellis was charged with disturbing the peace, trespassing, resisting arrest, and two counts of assaulting a police officer. Yet, curiously, after being described in the police affidavit as completely out of control during her arrest, she was released to the custody of her parents to receive medical attention 45 minutes after being jailed. However, her arrest triggered a whole series of problems. Although she returned to school in Louisiana, 2 months later, an attorney hired by the family tried to talk Heather into taking a plea deal from powerful Dunklin County prosecutor Stephen Sokoloff. We spoke with Sokoloff by phone on Thursday.
She had an opportunity when this thing started out with to resolve it for what's called a deferred prosecution on a misdemeanor. But no, she didn't want to do that.
The plea agreement says if she signed the plea agreement, they will be it would be dropped to one misdemeanor peace disturbance. Assaulting two felony assaulting officers, you're going to drop it to one peace disturbance? Because the bottom line is, I won't sue.
You had actually put in papers to sue them?
We had never done any
of
that.
You never done any?
Never had done any of that.
However, 11 months after her arrest, and with her family alleging there was no written or verbal notification at all, the misdemeanor charges against Heather Ellis were suddenly dismissed. However, the Ellis family's joy was short-lived. A friend of Heather's discovered some shocking news.
He was running a record check. There was a warrant out there for her arrest. Dangerous felon. Assaulted officers. Dangerous.
Mrs. Ellis says she went directly to Prosecutor Sokoloff's office to find out why Heather now faced felony counts that, if convicted, could see her face 15 years in prison.
I said, why would you want to fight this young lady? You don't even know her. I mean, we went into this conversation. Ms. Ellis, when you get through, I don't care what you say, you may as well take my way out. My way was the plea bargain. If you don't take that way, I can assure you'll never win here.
As she approaches the trial date on November 18th, and despite reportedly losing two jobs and her chance to enter medical school because of the pending felonies on her previously unmarked record, Heather Ellis has continued to refuse to sign any plea bargain offered by Sokoloff's office. As for Sokoloff, he says he's proceeding on with preparing for trial, but he expresses surprise so much attention is being paid to this case and the delays, which he accuses Ellis herself of intentionally stretching out.
Yeah, the reason why it's lasted for 3 years is because every time we get ready to go to trial, she fires her lawyer and hires another one in order to delay the thing. This thing has been, the most remarkable much ado about nothing on their part. They've had marches, they've had rallies. If I didn't think that there was evidence that well supported the charge, I wouldn't have filed the charge.
Stephen Sokoloff is not for the law. He's rewriting it as he goes, and it is not for mankind.
Heather Ellis has found a teaching job in Louisiana, but in between, she and her family have endured unexplained and frustrating continuances, the recusals of three previous judges from the case, and the recent hiring of a fourth defense attorney since her arrest. The obvious question, why go through all this? A fight you've been told you cannot win.
Character, integrity, honesty. You know, we invested in our daughter and said and let someone put her in prison for nothing. And the only way she could avoid prison is she lied and say she did something that she didn't do.
We must win because Dr. King said an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere.
It is some story. A number of civil rights organizations, including the ACLU and the Memphis branch of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, are looking into the Heather Ellis case along with some federal authorities. And for the latest on this very developing story, continue to log on to myfoxmemphis.com. Les Smith, Fox 13 News.
Okay, David, I know that was a little long, but we're going to tie up this bun here. What do you think about that, David?
Well, there's some very, very disturbing parallels into the case of the young man that we're going to discuss later on.
Now, what do you mean? You could draw a parallel?
You know. I mean, the prosecutor tells the family that you're not. I guarantee you, you're not going to win here. Okay?
Yeah, right. Can you believe that?
Holy cow!
You know, I mean, it's just unconscionable. You know, and then the fact that. You know, they send the police's stance or the prosecutor's stance that this is nothing to do with nothing, to do with nothing. Well, why'd you charge the lady in the first place? And then the part where you're going to offer the plea deal where you're going to take the two felony counts off to just a misdemeanor disturbance. And my mind tells me that you don't have a case. You don't have a case. The young lady never even assaulted any of the cops. Why would you take that off?
And since when do you take two felony misdemeanors and put them down to just a regular misdemeanor? I mean, a felony means you got assaulted with a gun. And we assaulted a police officer. That's a felony. That's not a misdemeanor.
Great.
Is this just – now, this stuff, I'm telling you, would never have gone on – if we did not have a black president. These people are coming out of the woodwork. And every time you hear it, we want our country back. Well, I'm going to play you something else that happened. Just listen to this. Now, this is just how unbelievable.
A long time ago, enforcement officer Bill Weisenberger ran for judge on a platform with Justice Court is the people's court. Now, family members and other witnesses claim Weisenberger, in an unprovoked attack, struck a mentally challenged young man and yelled a racial epithet at him on May 8th at the Canton Flea Market. Witnesses of the incident flea market, both vendors from Alabama, who were shocked at what they saw.
The day we were in Canton, my booth was like right on the corner right there off the street. The young man had been walking into different vendors asking could he help them back up. He was right there when we saw the guy slap him twice in the back of the head. Before, there was a young gentleman walking up the sidewalk. And the next thing I heard was a white gentleman, which was portraying himself as being a police officer, started yelling and yelling profanity to him, calling him names, slapped the boy in the back of the head, called him another name. And yes, he used the N-word. He called him a racial name. I choose not to say it because I do have family that is African-American, and we do not like that word. But he did call him the N-word, slapped him on the head once, and then he did it again, which was twice. He walked over and got in behind the young gentleman and hollered, "Run, boy, run." And as soon as the young gentleman ran, he went up to one of his fellow officers, or which was a officer, and said, "Yeah, I slapped him in the back of the head," and gave him the high five.
Friday, William Truly, president of the Canton branch of the NAACP, held a press conference calling on Judge Weisenberger to step down from hearing cases now.
2014, Eric Rivers, an African-American 20-year-old Kansas, Mississippi native, with a mental and learning disability, was an attendant of the semi-annual Kansas market in downtown Kansas.
Okay, now I don't know why that we must be having these thunderstorms must be gobbling something because that should have been plainer. Well, anyway, this judge slapped this young man who was mentally retarded. Slapped him again. He was moonlighting as a security guard at the semi-annual event in Mississippi. And when the young kid who was African American, who everybody knows, when he was walking by him, he just slapped him in the back of the head. just slapped, then slapped him again and knocked him down. And then he told, was laughing about it. Then he was told, when the young man got up, he told the young man, run, and he used the N-word, run. And he put his hand on his sidearm. This took place on May 8th in Flea Market in Canton, Mississippi. And it is just one of the main things that I believe people who always were this way were hiding. And the judge's name is Bill Weisenberger. Okay? It's just a complete... And the young man's family is, I believe their name is Rivers. They are, and this would not have even been a problem. But he did this in front, blatantly in front of the whites. But what these people don't understand, that everybody does not think like them. And they were horrified, the people that saw it. And Vicki McNeil, who happened to be a friend of the family of this kid, she said this affected me traumatically. And she went and told TV, WAPT TV, what happened. The Rivers family now is filing, they did file a lawsuit against Weisenberger, and Madison County District Attorney says that the case will go to the grand jury as soon as possible. And Kent Mayor Arnell Bolden told WJTV.com that Weisenberger has not been arrested yet. He said they're taking time to look at it. He says they want to make sure that the investigation is done properly and executed. This is a very sensitive and serious matter, he said, and it involves an elected official. We want to make sure we follow the proper protocol in terms of how we take any kind of legal action. The president of the Canton NAACP said that Weisenberger should resign immediately. We want to know whether or not this alleged crime of, and hate crime that is, told WAPT.com, we feel this is a crime that was made by Weisenberger, and he should be removed from office immediately. And right now we have a young man from the Democratic Party who gives good news, Mr. Melvin Williams. How are you, sir?
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Fine. Are you at your place yet, or are you just still driving?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you. I'm in my car on my way to South Carolina.
Yeah, okay. So you're not there yet?
No, I'm not. Am I on the can you hear me okay, or do I need to get off the speakerphone?
I hear you fine. I hear you fine. Yeah, you're on live. I hear you fine.
Okay, those programs you just had about the racial injustice in those two situations is just terrible. Just shows we have a major racial injustice problem every day in America.
Well, and we're right in the middle of it in North Carolina.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
Major league. And what have been some of the changes since? I mean, you are actually you communicate to everybody in North Carolina, matter of fact, around the world. What have you seen that racially has changed in North Carolina since this Art Pope administration has come into office?
They really have done terrible things. They have changed the voting laws, but it's just going to be, they are planning to create chaos, we understand, on Election Day in November. They're going to try a massive move. They made it easier to do absentee ballots. They're going to try a massive move to get hundreds of thousands of Republicans to vote by absentee ballot. And then when the Democrats go on Election Day and during the early voting, try to challenge just as many Democrats as possible to to create confusion and keep the lines long and get people discouraged to go home. So the Democratic vote will be very, very light. And you know they've changed so many of the voting qualifications.
Well, but I don't understand that this has got to hurt their vote because their vote can't be that large.
Well, I mean, Go ahead.
Okay, well, because the thing is that there are more Democrats in North Carolina than are Republicans.
They are, and that's what they're trying to cut down and why they changed it so if a college student votes in the town where his college is and his parents can't claim him for a $2,500 child as a dependent anymore and many things. Right. But on election day, Michael, what we understand is that they are going to send out four or five or maybe six absentee ballot forms ahead of time to Republican voters that groups like American Prosperity, which is the Koch brothers and our Koch,
right.
And try to get as many Republicans as possible to vote ahead of time. Then they can create some chaos on election day because they are hoping it'll just be mainly Democrats left to vote. Of course, you know, we have always done extremely well in the early voting, but they say they're going
right.
to do a lot of early challenging then, too.
Well, how are these absentee ballots, how would they affect the vote? I mean, because the Democrats, especially African Americans, vote early vote.
Yes, well, I don't know what they really are envisioning, but we think they will really push absentee ballots for Republicans. And whether that will be successful or not, I don't know. But we really need to work on the early voting. And another thing, and this is almost unbelievable, in the primary, there was a law that if all three members of a county board of elections agreed to shorten the early voting hours, that it could be done, and that they could apply to the state board of elections. The state board of elections couldn't do it unless all three members of the county board of elections agreed. And you know, in each county board of elections, there are two Republicans and one Democrat. In 30 of the 100 counties, that Democratic member agreed to shorten the voting hours, and the State Board of Election approved it. And my home county of Duplin County was one of those counties in southeastern North Carolina. And it was just terrible that they persuaded the 30 Democratic members in 30 counties to agree to shorten the early voting hours because we need all the early voting hours we can possibly have.
Well, but isn't that person appointed by the party chair, the Duplin County party chair?
Yep. Right, exactly. The county executive committee nominated her, and the chair appointed her, and the state board of elections, you know, the governor agreed. But nobody knows what pressure and what deception they used on various county Democratic board members to get them to agree. In Duplin County, she said they told her they just didn't have enough staff to set up two locations, so she agreed to shorten the early voting hours. So I think if they were able to have 112 hours, and she agreed to shorten it to just 70.
Can't the chair of the party, the Democratic chair, remove her?
No, you can't remove her for 2 years once they're on there. She'll sit right there, and it's just really something in this world. We're going to talk with her and pass a resolution of our executive committee asking her not to do that in November, but at this point, I'm not sure whether they will whether they've already agreed to do it in November or not, but we definitely don't need to agree to it because early voting is the Democratic stronghold.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you know anybody out in Franklin County?
I do know some people in Franklin County, yes. Armita Eatman and her famous mother, you know.
Oh, she's from Franklin County? Oh,
Franklin County, yeah. Uh-huh, they're from Franklin County, her 92-year-old mother. Uh-huh.
Well, who's the chair in Franklin County, Democratic chair?
His name is very unpronounceable, a very nice gentleman. His first name is Larry, and his second name is something like Marcinko. What do you know about Franklin County?
Well, because we're going to be talking about that very shortly. David Adams is on the phone, and it's about this case we've been following for gee whiz, a year, I guess. I've been following it at least 6 months. David's been following it for as long as he's been alive. But
yep.
it's about this young kid named Shannon Namodi.
Okay.
Who was railroaded in taking a plea bargain yesterday.
Oh, my. On what charge?
That's what we want to know.
Okay.
Because he's never been to court. Until yesterday, he was held in solitary confinement for 2 years.
Oh, no.
His mother can't even see him.
Oh, that is. His mother couldn't see him?
Mother, they won't allow her.
I thought that was just illegal. I thought the family could visit.
Oh, absolutely. Wow. Well, and how do you put somebody in solitary confinement and you have no proof? It's a violation of the 6th and 14th Amendments.
Oh, sure it is, and they've not been convicted of anything.
Absolutely.
Outrageous.
This is a we're going to be talking about that full blast in the next segment, but I wanted to get you before you leave. I know you're tied up. What's the story with the Democratic Party convention starting June the 6th?
Oh, it's going to be a big, exciting time on Saturday, June the 7th in Raleigh. At the Raleigh Convention Center, we'll have hundreds and hundreds of delegates there, and we'll be voting on resolutions and platforms, and we'll be hearing the leading state candidates speak. And it's going to be an exciting time. And then that night at 7 o'clock is the Jefferson Jackson Dinner at the North Carolina Museum of Science, which is an exciting place to have it. I can't wait to see all the exhibits there. And the speaker there is going to be the great Congresswoman from Texas, Congressman Sheila Jackson Lee. She is going to really be a star. And I downloaded some pictures of the internet from her last night, put in the good news about Democrats' newsletter. She's a very attractive 64-year-old Congress lady from Texas and just dynamic. And she has all kinds of good quotes because Sheila Jackson Lee is not afraid to say what needs to be said.
Absolutely. Matter of fact, I'm going to see where I'm going to be going to the Jefferson Jackson. And I'm going to see if I can get her to come on the show.
Wonderful.
But tell us something else before you got to go about how can people, do you know how people can get ticket information? What do they need to call Democratic Party headquarters?
Yes, and go to the website, which is, it stands for North Carolina Democratic Party. It's ncdp.org, ncdp.org. You can order the tickets. It's going to be a wonderful event. Now, the state convention that day is free and open to everybody, and the dinner tickets are $125, and all the proceeds go to the help of the North Carolina Democratic Party and Democratic candidates. But I also want to tell you about the speech of the good news about Democrats' newsletter, which I publish every week. And anybody who has good news about Democrats, send it to me at melvin535@gmail.com, melvin535@gmail.com. This newsletter has done so much to bring the party together. Before the newsletter, all 100 counties were sort of operating on their own, and nobody really knew whether anybody else was working except themselves. And by telling the story of the county parties, it's really helped a lot of people to feel like they're not alone anymore, that they are working in a mass movement. This the good newsletter also focuses on the activities of the auxiliaries, like the Democratic Women, Young Democrats, and so on. And it's the first time we've had that. And every week I have a youth feature about an outstanding Democrat. And the one coming up next week is only 4 years old. And he is from Creswell in Washington County. And the youth features are just very, very popular. So I invite everybody who would like to subscribe to the North Carolina Democratic Party's Good News About Democrats newsletter to email me at melvin535@gmail.com.
Okay, well, before you go, I need to ask you one more question about Franklin County.
Sure.
Who do you know, because the mother doesn't know many people there. Who can she go to? Do you know anybody that she can go to that might be able to direct her for some help?
Okay, the senator there who just in this Republican landslide lost out is Douglas Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R, Doug Berger, and I think he is an attorney. Also, the 13th Congressional District Party Chair is Jesse, and his last name is Goslin. He lives there, G-O-S-L-E-N, Jesse Goslin. And I can send you those addresses and email addresses. And those are the ones that I particularly know in that county. But Miss Armenta Eaton, she has all kinds of connections, you know, because she's been the party chair there, and she and her mother, Rosanelle, have been strong stars in the Mall Munges marches.
Okay, well, are they going to be up, or at least the daughter going to be at the convention?
Yes, she will. She'll definitely be there. If she's living and breathing, she'll be there. And the mother might come. I don't know. I don't know if the mother will come or not. Hey, but I did want to tell you, as we all talk so serious, can I tell you something funny, Michael?
Your readers would
enjoy this, okay? This pastor said that he was at the 60th wedding anniversary of a couple in his church, and he said, "This is amazing. With so much divorce going on, how did you all manage to stay married for 60 years? And what's the secret of your marriage?" And Michael, the man, spoke up real quickly and said, "Oh, we know the secret of our marriage. Our marriage is we like to travel together. So we like to just get out and go all the time." He said, for example, for our 25th wedding anniversary, I took my wife all the way to one of the most beautiful places in China. The bit of our 50th wedding anniversary, I went back to get her. For the 50th wedding anniversary, we went back to get her.
Let's see. My wife ain't listening. That might be a good trick. Let me see. Let me call RCI to see if they have any resorts in China.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Well, I want to thank you, Melvin Williams, and I will look forward to seeing you. And what was the name of that young lady again with her mother in the Franklin County?
Yes, Armenta, A-R-M-E-N-T-A, Armenta Eaton, E-A-T-O-N. And anybody at the state headquarters can give you her telephone number.
Good. Okay.
Armenta
I want to
Eaton.
Thank you,
okay.
Melvin, who has the good news of what's going on. And listen, if it's going on, Melvin Williams knows. Ladies
great.
And gentlemen.
God bless you. Have a great day.
You too. I'll see you next week.
Okay, wonderful.
Bye-bye. Well, David, we have some information, and I'm going to see this, our mentor, Eaton, next week. We need to do whatever we can do. David?
Yes, I'm here, Michael.
Okay. Yeah, we need to do whatever we can do. Now, before we go any further, I have a young lady that's going to hold on here that I need to get to, and then we're going to get to what I wanted to get to before. Hold on. Hello, Bess. Is this Bess?
Yes, this is Bess.
How are you, Bess?
I'm doing great. How are you?
You can hear me all right?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Are you listening on the computer or listening on the phone?
I'm listening on the phone.
Okay, good. It sounded like we were a little delayed there. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to meet Bess Hergel, who has not only a green thumb, but her fingers are roots. If she looks at it, she can grow it. Tell us, Beth, what you did when you came over to my house last week.
Okay, what I did was I applied a soil that I had been working on for over 20 years, and it's a treatment really for soil. And because of the soil in the United States, most of it is no good, so it's treated or fertilized or they do other things to it. However, I was able to go over to Mike's house, apply my soil to his plant. It wasn't dying or anything, but it's kind of limp, and it still looked good. Once I applied the soil down near the root, within 5 to 10 seconds, they saw the difference. It gets deeper in color. It gets very strong, and you see that right away. And you don't have to water the plant for 7 to 14 days. So those places that are dealing with water, drought and things like that, and they still want their city to look nice, they will be able to use this. And so I'm quite excited about it. I did go to different boutique shops, flower shops, not boutique shops, I'm sorry, but flower shops here in Charlotte, showed them. I told them to pull a plant from the shelf, which they did. The plant wasn't dying. However, you could see the difference between my soil and the other soil that was on the shelves with the other plants. You could see it right away.
Well, I want to tell everybody, this is, now listen, I have a green thumb. I never grew nothing till I got down here because I was doing nothing. I was in the house by myself for like by 4 months when my daughter came down. My wife didn't come down for another 9 months. And I love plants. And I started growing stuff. My aunt gave me a plant. I have a plant out there now is 1993. That would make it like 16 years old.
You have a jungle.
Growing. And anyway, this one plant that I had this plant since 1997. My mother died. And it's one of those peace lily plants with the white flowers, the green, big, long leaves, and the white flowers sticks out. Anyway, I bring my plants in during the winter. I take them outside in the springtime. So I had just taken it outside maybe a day or two, and they were all starting to perk back up. You know, sun, that acid rain that falls. So, but she came in, now the plant wasn't limp, it was no limp, but she took this soil and just put it around, pushed it down in the soil, put it around the plant, and in 6 seconds, I say 6 seconds, the plant started getting greener. It was already green, and they were starting to stand up, even the plant, the leaf that was turning brown. Stood up. It's just unbelievable.
So what magical soil? What is it?
Well, she met Jack and the Beanstalk.
Ah.
And she traded a cow for these soil. For these soil.
Okay. Couple drops of soil.
Is that right, Beth?
Say it again. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you.
You met Jack and the Beanstalk, and you traded a cow for this soil?
Magical soil.
No, I don't know. I don't think
no?
I did.
Oh, okay. So... I don't expect you to tell us the ingredients.
Well, I deal in trade secrets, and the soil is really, it's a small bag, but it's very powerful in what's in the bag.
Oh.
It's about 1/4 of a pound, so it's small. And if you have small plants, you can take that one bag and split it in three and just put it down near the roots. Put your soil back over the plant, and don't water for the next 7 to 14 days.
Well, I'll tell you, I was looking at the plant out here now, and I have, what happens if it rains, though? Because it rained the last 2 days.
It's okay.
Well, it's nothing
I can do about that, of course. The plant will be okay.
In other words, you don't have to water it because this ingredient in it and does the trick.
It's
like getting a shot of vitamin D or C or
so
both.
Is she going to go?
I'm also on Estee.com. If anybody's interested in ordering the soil, they can go on ETSY, Estee.com, and put in Bless Her Soil and the number one, and it'll come up and you can order what you want.
Okay, now
and
say
I'll
this
ship
again.
It out to you.
Does it say the title over the
E-T-S-Y
at
E-T-S-Y.com. E-T-S-Y.com.
Oh, okay. Okay. And
E-T-S-Y.
Oh, E-T-S-Y.com at what?
Bless Her Soil and the number one.
Okay, bless the soil, number one. Now, Thomas just came in here, and I know he could use some of this. No, the other thing I wanted to tell you, remember we put some down in the grass Remember that?
Right.
I have not. Yeah, my lawn man came. He didn't come yesterday, today, because of rain, but he said there's no seed down there, so nothing's going to grow. So, but he told me what seed to buy. He said, just buy a small bag. Now, is it too late to put the seed over that now and mix it in?
No, no, you can go ahead and do whatever you're going to do.
Okay, good, because I'm going to get some tomorrow and put it down on there.
And how is that looking?
Well, he said there's no seed there, so it's not going to grow anything. But my plant is looking great.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, the plant's looking great.
Good.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely looking great. And, in fact, there's another peace lily coming out.
And that's what happens. A lot of people get babies.
Ah.
And I'm really looking to be able to go into different businesses that have a lot of plants and be able to put the soil on the plant. We show them one, just let them see what it does, and then go back in and do the rest of the plant because it's low maintenance. So I don't have to be there every day and not
every week.
Will it work? I mean, to see what the plant's doing.
Right. Well, would it, do you know if this works on the fruit plants, fruits like tomatoes and things like that?
Well, I haven't tried it on tomatoes, but I did put the cantaloupe seed and also honeydew seed, and within 4 days, I got all kind of roots. It was actually busting out the bag.
Right. Frankenstein wrote.
No.
Well, I want to thank
you. But I'm really proud of what it does.
Okay, give us that address one more time before we leave.
Okay, it's estetsy.com. And my email address is blessherssoil@gmail.com.
Okay. And that is Beth Hurdle, ladies and gentlemen, who is also a member of the Mecklenburg County Black Leadership Caucus. I am the new president of
I think she should be nominated for a Nobel Prize
Nobel Peace Prize.
She has revolutionized
Nobel
growing things.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, we're going to see because my daughter kills her plants in a micro minute.
Yeah.
So I went over there now. She says, "Oh, yeah, it's got water." I said, "Yeah, the pot. She had a pot that was only 1 inch wide, and the plant was 6 feet tall." So, you know, I don't know what's going on there, but we'll have to take you over there also, Beth. And as soon as my lawn man comes, I'll get you two together.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for having me on.
I appreciate everything you did. And matter of fact, I think you got to come over and put some more in my other plant. So, you know, while I'm out here. Oh, now, is there a price here? What's the story? Or it's all online?
Okay, if you buy it for me, okay, it's $6 per pack. Okay, if you go online, it's going to be a little more because the shipment is also included.
Okay.
So when you order, the shipment and the tax and everything is also included in it.
Okay. And this is a bag that is about, well, what did you say, how much it is, the small bag?
It's a 1/4 pound. It's a small bag, as you noticed, but it packs powerful stuff.
Oh, it sure does. All right, Beth. Thank you very much.
Okay, and thank you.
No problem. I'll see you. I'll give you a call later.
Okay, then thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
No.
That's Beth Hurdle.
I just have to ask, because I haven't been over here at night lately. Does it glow at night? Is it like Fukushima Ridge?
Well, you know, I was.
Does it keep you up late at night?
I went out the back deck to go put the garbage in it, and the plant looked like the leaves were following me.
Yeah.
They were turning with me. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't been that close to it. Yeah, I just noticed it last night because the light was still, it was dark. The light was still on the deck.
You know that old,
when I went out.
Old story with it. The growth over everything.
Yes, yeah, well.
The redneck.
Including the redneck. Speaking about redneck.
So what's that, Franklin County? What?
Yeah. Franklin County. Speaking about redneck, We have Mr. David Adams on the phone, and I want to tell you, David, is everybody ready for what you're going to say about...
I doubt it very seriously, Michael, and welcome Mr. Thomas Fortenberry, your senior producer. I just want to say beforehand that I am grateful for all the opportunities that you guys have given me to advocate for Shannon Amodi on your show, as well as some of the other topics that we've talked about. But I am mad as hell. I am livid, okay? The situation that transpired yesterday in Lewisburg, North Carolina, at the Franklin County Courthouse is nothing short of a modern-day lynching of a young black man. And it's just incredible that the court even allowed this gentleman, Mr. Matry Mike Clinkumson, to represent this kid when this kid had an affidavit on file at the county clerk's office firing him not less than a week ago. So I'm very discouraged. The fight is not over. It's just horrible. You know, those are my initial comments. I have a lot more to say. I'll let you go ahead and cue this up, Michael, but I have a lot more to say.
Hey, listen, I want to tell you, this is the most horrendous, I can't say the most horrendous. Well, we got a young lady also replaced for Heather Ellis, who's getting 15 years for jumping a line in Walmart. Now, what the hell is going on here? And I'll tell you what's going on here. Barack Obama is going on here. And some of these people who have been in the closet since 1964 and 1965 because they saw they could make a buck, now see everything going to hell in a handbasket. And what I mean by that is they ain't going to count anymore because they will not be in charge anymore. And you know what? That's too damn bad. Because now every single time any person of color steps out of line in one of these redneck, and I think that's a kind word. They're not rednecks. They're not rednecks. These people are just plain racist. And you notice they always say, I want to take my country back. My country! I mean, it ain't their country. It was the Indians' country. They came here. And they took it from the Indians. I mean, suppose we get the Indians now, the Indians all over the country say, we want our country back.
Now, Mike, are you implying that Euro-Caucasioidians are somehow immigrants?
Immigrants?
This has always been...
Aliens! Aliens! They're not immigrants, they're aliens who came here and invaded. You know, they have a TV show on just came back, which I love. It's called Falling Skies on Sci-Fi Channel. And the whole thing was these aliens, and I don't mean from Mexico or Chile, from outer space came and took over this country. I mean, started blasting. It ain't taking over. They're trying to take over the country. And what happened was about 2 years into, a year into, a year and a half into the show, they found out that there was another alien group that came down here and was fighting them and got on the side of the Earthlings. And some of these people just didn't understand that they wanted to help the Earthlings out. They didn't trust them either, but they were really here to help the Earthlings. And what happened was that when they met the leader, when he met the leader said, okay, he says, take all your people to Brazil. care of this. We'll do the fight here because you don't have the big weapons we got. He said, no, no, no. This is our country. We want to defend our country. And he went and grabbed the alien. The alien slapped him, knocked him across the room. And then he comes around later that you touch one of them, it's like a highly insult. And when the guy, so he was explaining to him that, no, this is what we do here. We fight. He said, we want to fight for you. He said, but you can't beat these people. You can't. He said, yes, we're going to fight to the end. We're going to fight to the end. This is the way we are. He said, and this is ours. We need to fight to defend ours. And he said, you know, you're the only race of people that we have helped in the universe that said they want to fight, even though they might die. Well, here we are right now. We're here in 2014, but it's like 1964. And it's not just 1964 for us African-Americans, Hispanics, and everybody else. It's 1964 for everybody that doesn't align with them. And there are more whites that are in trouble than us. And they need to realize that these people are killing everybody because they want it their way, because their way is for them. Everybody else is second. And now they have come out of the walls. They have used the excuse because there's a black man in the White House. These people who are judges slapping people in the head in the public. In public. There was a line that I wanted to play with, let's see, the story in the heat of the night. Remember that story in the heat of the night? Thomas,
yep.
And in the story in the heat of the night, Sidney Poitier is a detective. Mr. Tibbs is his name. And in the story, he goes down to, that was Mississippi, wasn't it? Yeah, it was Mississippi.
Mississippi is always somehow in this conversation. I don't know how, but it's always in this conversation.
He goes down to Mississippi. And he meets up with this sheriff, who is really a good guy at heart, but he's going along with the storyline because, hey, it's been that way, and, you know,
and
as long as...
But, you know, you can't change what's the status
right,
quo.
Right.
It's always been that way.
So I just want to play you. This, I believe, is one, if not one of the greatest clips in history to show you how far we have not come. Just
listen. For you, huh, Virgil?
Listen, you know something I don't know?
I found a piece of Osmunder in Covert's car. A piece of what? On the brake pedal. Osmunder. Fern root.
Fern root? Oh, is Mr. Endicott here?
Yes, sir. He's out in the greenhouse. Would you follow me, please?
This here is Virgil.
Mr. Tibbs. How do you do, sir?
May I have Henry fetch you something? Some light refreshment?
No, thank you. We're right the way we are. Oh, I'll have something cold. Something soft. Anything.
Henry, bring in a pitcher of lemonade. I have one, too.
Yes, sir.
Oh, I didn't know it was possible to grow this species locally.
Oh, you like flowers?
I do.
Well, Mr. Tibbs, do you know anything about orchids?
Well, not very much, but I do like them.
Well, let me show you. Endicott's Folly. What do you think?
It's beautiful. It's breathtaking.
Have you a favorite, Mr. Tibbs?
Well, I am partial to any of the epiphytics.
Why, isn't that remarkable? That of all the orchids in this place, you should prefer the epiphytics. I wonder if you know why.
Maybe it would be helpful if you'd tell me.
Because, like the Negro, they need care and feeding and cultivating. And that takes time. That's something you can't make some people understand. That's something Mr. Cobra didn't realize.
Is this what the epiphytics root in?
My point. They thrive on it. Take it away from them, they do poorly.
What do you call this material?
That's osmundin, fern root.
Well, we don't want to take any more of your time, Mr. Endicott.
Why'd you two come here?
To ask you about Mr. Covert.
Let me understand this. You two came here to question me?
Well, your attitudes, Mr. Endicott, your points of view are a matter of record. Some people, well, let us say the people who work for Mr. Covert might reasonably regard you as the person least likely to mourn his passing. We were just trying to clarify some of the evidence. Was Mr. Colbert ever in this greenhouse, say, last night about midnight?
Gillespie?
Yeah.
You saw it.
I saw it.
What are you going to do about it?
I don't know.
I'll remember that. There was a time when I could have had you shot.
Clear out, and I mean fast.
What about that big speech you gave me this morning?
I didn't know you were going to slap any white man, least of all Endicott.
All right, give me another day. 2 days, I'm close. I can pull that fat cat down. I can bring him right off this hill.
Oh, boy. Man, you're just like the rest of us. Ain't you?
So now, for those that have never seen the movie, I mean, this is, you got to go see this movie in the heat of the night. I mean, you had two Academy Award winners, Rod Steiger and Sidney Poitier, who were at odds from the very first time they saw one another. And towards three-quarters of the film, he's carrying Sidney Poitier's bag to the train station and asks him to stay. So, but the thing that I wanted to play here was, is where Sidney Poitier, they go in to challenge, not challenge, to ask this guy, because Sidney Poitier said the rich guy killed another rich guy. The other rich guy that died was going to build a huge factory that was going to employ lots of African-Americans and poor whites, because this was a poor town. And it would have taken all these people who were out there picking cotton for Endicott into a cleaner factory environment and not out in the hot sun. So he had a lot to give up if Endicott did build this factory there. He was killed. So Sidney Poitier saw the Osmond on the floorboard of the car, and that comes to a major factory. But, hey, there goes cotton all over Mississippi. But he was going to blame him. And the little, they slapped to one another, and that's what happened. This guy, Endicott, went over and slapped Sidney Poitier. Sidney Poitier didn't wait a second. He slapped him right back. And that's when he said to the sheriff, did you see that? And he was crying at the time because he was so shocked. Well, he said, you know, years ago, I would have you shot for that. Well, where's the difference that we are right now? Where are we at right now, David Adams? Where are we with that same, where are we at?
Well, Michael, you know, it's a situation that is, you know, more, I guess can be more, you know, better explained when you look at cases like Shannon's case. You know, he's charged with shooting a white woman in the face. Anytime you have a crime in this country where a black man is accused of committing some kind of crime, a violent crime like that against a white person, you know, they're going to throw the book at him. I mean, when he goes to court, they're going to smash him. I mean, it's going to be they're going to leave no doubt that this is something that will not occur in our society. A black man will not use this kind of violence against a white person. Okay? And we see this every day. You know, you look at the cases where you have people who are charged with violent crimes, black-on-black crimes. The kind of time that we get for killing one another is minimum in comparison to the kind of time that you're going to get if you commit these kinds of crimes against a person that is of white ethnicity. And, you know, the clip that you played from In the Heat of the Night that depicts, you know, the southern towns in Mississippi is very indicative of what's going on in our society today. So that was an excellent parallel, you know, in terms of the kinds of things that are going on when you're dealing with criminal behavior or when you're dealing with the criminal justice system with whites, you know, who are in a similar situation as other blacks. You know, I mean, this is something, like you said, related to President Obama being seated in the White House as the first sitting black president. You know, a lot of these rednecks, these racist rednecks, are coming out of the woodwork. You know, and Shannon's case is just indicative of the fact that they're not even, once upon a time, they would manufacture evidence against you to put you behind bars. Okay? Now, today, they're not even making it up. They're just doing whatever they want to do. You know, we're going to lock you up, and there's nothing you can do about it. We don't care what kind of money your family has. Yeah. We don't care what kind of lawyer you bring in here. You're going to jail. If they have it set to send you to prison, your black behind is going to prison. End of story.
And wasn't that what that was said by the DA in the Heather Ellis court?
Yeah, the guy said, I guarantee you, you're not going to win it here. You're not going to win anything here.
Absolutely right. You ain't going to win jack here. And just like that clown, who was the clown that called, what did he give? He wouldn't even give his last name, but he's a detective. Who was that clown that called Beth?
His name is called, his name is Jim Casper. You know, our investigations through some police friends we have down down that way identified him. He actually is a private investigator. He works for a company called Piedmont Investigations. Okay, so it's a no-brainer. Why, if they were going to take this kid into court and lynch him, why they would even call the mother the night before to tell her that her son was going to make a plea? Okay?
Well,
I mean, I don't know why they did that.
Well,
other than to terrorize her.
That's the reason why they did it, the terrorizer. And in other words, ain't nothing you can do. We're going to do it anyway.
You know, Michael, I just have to, I have to put this out here, okay? Now, we all know that Shannon was charged back in 2012 of shooting Rhonda McClain, who was a white woman, in the face, okay? And then it came up with the story that he conspired with her 15-year-old daughter to kill her and to steal $65,000 from the home. Okay? Now, these are some of the most disturbing facts in this case. And after I read these to you, Michael, you tell me why this young black man would have ever, I mean ever, cop to a deal in a case like this. Okay? Now, first of all, Rhonda McClain never told the police that Shannon was the person who shot her. If she did tell them, the cops never entered this crucial information into any of their reports. Okay? That's fact. All right? Shannon was not only charged with first-degree attempted murder, but he was also charged with larceny of her .22-caliber rifle. Now, during the investigation, when they processed the home, they found the rifle in the woman's home while Shannon had already been locked up. Okay, that's fact. The police had no probable cause to arrest this kid from the very start. The information utilized to justify charges and an arrest of this youth were obtained through hearsay statements over 24 hours after he had already been taken into custody. That's fact. These are all legitimate records that are coming from the case file. Eyewitnesses at the scene of the night of the crime told police that a white male was seen fleeing from 109 Shearing Court where the crime took place moments after the shooting. Witness accounts are supported by police reports and other official documents which reveal that primary officers on the scene established that the suspected shooter was no longer at the scene upon police arrival. Shannon never left the scene. He stayed there till the EMS and police got there. That's facts, Michael. Police allege that Shannon Nomodi conspired with the victim's 15-year-old daughter to kill her and rob her. This information was obtained through hearsay from a witness who said that Shannon and the teen girl had exchanged text on Facebook while plotting to commit the crime. And this is fact. Now, when they investigated it, those allegations were proven false when the State Bureau of Investigation found out when they conducted a Facebook search warrant that there hadn't been any Facebook text exchange between Shannon and this 15-year-old kid. That's fact. No forensic evidence such as blood, DNA, or fingerprints linking Shannon Nomodi to the crime has never been made public. That's fact. The nearly $65,000 that was stolen from the victim in this case was strangely obtained by police, who never disclosed where it was found or what tip led them to the money, and all while Shannon had already been in custody. That's all fact. Why would this kid cop a deal for 11 and a half years to 15 years for a case that doesn't exist? Why?
And no fingerprint, no DNA.
Well, there's nothing. Look, he's the kid.
No computer.
Called. He's the guy who, you know, sat there and waited and helped this lady. He was the person helping, not hurting the situation. This is just, look. I don't know what he suffered over the last year or what was said.
Well, I think he suffered more in the last 2 days.
Maybe. Who knows what they did?
Because when they took him out of Nash County and went to Franklin County, all of a sudden he changes his mind.
Right.
And he saw his mother like a few days before that and his father. Spoke to him on the phone.
Right, go on. I got it.
Now all of a sudden I did it.
What did they do to him?
Well, remember, what David, tell us. What did that lawyer tell Shannon was going to happen if he ever was dismissed from the case?
Well, he threatened Shannon. He told Shannon that if you talk to anyone else, if you talk to your mother about this case, I am going to help the prosecution convict you, and I'll make sure you get 30 years in prison. Now, this is an attorney who has done nothing for this kid in 2 years. Shannon, he went to court. He was arraigned initially back in August or November of 2012, and he has never been to court. You're talking about almost 700 days this kid's been locked up, and most of that time was in solitary confinement because the jailers were harassing him, trying to coerce him into the deal, to take a plea deal, okay? You're talking about a guy who has never brought this kid to court. He's never worried about this kid. Now, his mother transported a document from the Nass County Jail up to Lewisburg and filed it at the county clerk's office. It was an affidavit firing Mike Klinkensom as his attorney. Then, less than 3 or 4 days later, Klinkensom has this kid in some kind of arranged hearing where the kid cops a deal? Come on, man. Come on. I mean, it's a no-brainer. They whipped this kid's ass. Okay, they did everything they could to get this kid to stand in court and say, yes, I'll accept the deal. I can't see this kid stand in solitary confinement where they only let you out your cell for 1 hour a day for over a year and a half to withstand all of that and then suddenly go into the court and say, yes, I did it. I'm not buying it, Michael.
No, I ain't either. I mean, maybe it was so bad that Franklin County, what he went through, when he said, you plead a deal or you're going to stay here.
Yeah.
As I said, that S. Franklin County, Guantanamo Bay North.
And or, you don't know, I mean, they might have told the kid, you know, straight up, we're just going to, you know, we'll kill your mom, we'll do whatever. I mean, they will do whatever it takes to crack him, and they obviously did.
I mean, because you have the whole record in your on your blog, David, correct?
That's correct.
And there is not one single piece of evidence that points to him as doing anything.
That's what I don't understand. So did they just?
But see, this is what I was talking about before. Before they would manufacture evidence. But it's so blatant now, they don't even have to manufacture evidence. That's because the judges are involved, too.
All they have to do is baton the evidence.
That's it. The judges are involved. And don't tell me people out there, judges don't get involved. They had judges sentenced to jail. One is 65 years for what they did to the kids in Pennsylvania.
Well, Michael, I mean, to just expound on that part as far as the judges are concerned, everybody had a stake in this kid going to prison. Everybody, from the sheriff's department to the judge, the original judge, Judge Stevens, okay, D.W. Stevens, who signed Shannon's arrest warrant, from him to the prosecutor's office, they had a stake in this kid going to prison. Okay, they didn't have a case. They knew they didn't have a case. But just to highlight, you know, the judge's potential involvement in this. Okay, the morning that Shannon's mother found out that he was, in fact, it had been transported from Nass County to Lewisburg, okay, to for this hearing, okay, she immediately contacted the clerk of court's office and sent a letter that she had typed up, outlining how, you know, they had filed the affidavit and that Clinkham shouldn't even be representing her son in any capacity. Now, the woman at the clerk's office, her name is Annette Henderson. She hand-walked that document once Beth Crudup faxed it to the county clerk's office. She walked it to the judge. You tell me the judge just ignores this? The first thing they should have had was some kind of show cause hearing, okay? Because that should have been addressed. Are you his attorney? He should have asked Shannon, did you fire this? Did you write this? Is this your handwriting? Is this your signature? Did you fire this attorney? And once Shannon said, yes, I did that, okay, he says, well, you know, the case is dismissed. You can't represent him. You're not his legal. You're not his attorney of record.
Yeah, your
that
point.
That never happened.
Point. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we'll see. They wouldn't have dismissed the case, but they would have said, well, we're going to give you. You have a lawyer? No, we'll appoint a lawyer. So the thing is that do you have in your hands the script, the document, the court script of what went on during this administrative hearing?
No, I have not had that. I haven't gotten a chance to get that yet. Apparently, Beth Crudup is probably having some transportation issues to get back down into Lewisburg. You know, you have to keep in mind, this woman has to drive almost an hour and a half from her hometown up in Dunn, North Carolina, to Lewisburg to where this courthouse. And they whipped his mother's ass, as Thomas told us yesterday, Michael. They whipped her ass, okay, and took her car and transferred it and had it towed all the way up to racist Johnson County. Johnson County is the most racist county in America. You know, they beat her up and they took her car to try to preclude her proactiveness and trying to fight for her son. So now she's in a situation where they've convicted him. They got him going to prison, and she still doesn't have transportation. She has difficulty getting around. So eventually we will get that document, the transcript from the court, which will highlight for us or show us what actually transpired. Because I want to know why this kid who withstood, like I said, Michael, a year and a half of solitary confinement in a 4x6 jail cell and never broke. He never broke, not one time. And now all of a sudden this lawyer gets fired. And he gets his little judge buddies and his prosecuting buddies and bring the kid in, and this secretive hearing, and the kid suddenly pleads guilty to a crime, you know, that he's been saying for the last 2 years that he didn't do.
Well, and besides that, this lawyer, Clinkerson, never saw this boy for a year.
He had to. We don't know the last time Michael saw him. We don't know the last time Shannon saw this man. Okay, as far as I'm concerned, he probably saw him yesterday after the Franklin County Sheriffs beat his ass. Okay, and then he brought him in the courtroom. You go in there, you tell him that you did this.
Right. So now people will want to know, what's the reason behind it?
I think the reason
explain it to us, David.
I think it's
the story about it.
They cover their
ass. Well, yeah,
they
cover
their
ass. Okay, so
they had a kid detained for 2 years. That's like almost a human rights crime.
Yeah, almost
had,
it is.
They had to get a conviction. This is what I said months ago. My fear was if they didn't get him to confess to doing it, they were going to kill his ass because that's their only way to protect themselves.
So
they had to make the problem go away, and it looks like they've done it.
So, David, tell us, what do you think they are trying to cover up?
One of the things is, Michael, I think what you're alluding to is the sidebar that I discussed with you late last night, and that also Thomas had talked to us a little bit about on yesterday. Thomas, I'm not talking about Mr. Fortenberry. I'm talking about Thomas, which is Beth Crudup's significant other. Okay, we spoke with him at length on the telephone on yesterday. Now, I have been privileged to a number of details related to some of the things that have been going on in the Namodi family, which I had not previously had authority to disclose. However, I spoke with Beth Crudup early this morning. I've gotten authorization to discuss it. Okay, first of all, the boy's aunt and uncle, Brenda Namodi and Paul Namodi, okay, were complicit in making certain that this kid went to jail. Okay, and the reason, which I'm about to reveal, are just simply depressing. They made certain this kid go to jail to inherit money.
David, before you go there, now, there's that side, the family side, and there's also this other side with this, what's this guy's name, Chalk, and the mother and the dentistry. So there's two sides, so I want you to do one side at a time. Tell us about, you're going to do the family side, then tell us about this DJ Chalk and the woman who was supposedly shot and her ties with the dental office. Okay?
Yeah, okay. Well, the story has moving parts, Michael, and I'll finish up very quickly on the family side. Now, of course, when they shopped around to get an attorney when Shannon first got in trouble, Mike Clinkerson was referred to them because Cheshire, Parker, Schneider, and Bryan is one of the largest law firms in the state of North Carolina, okay? They went to him. In just moments of talking to this man, the family, Beth herself personally didn't feel like he would be a good fit to represent her son. She told him, we're going to try for someone else. Please don't take this case. Now, unfortunately, the elevator in that building is small, and her brother, who's about 6'5 and over 300 pounds, it could only fit her and another person there. So Beth and Paul went downstairs. Now, this sneaky bitch the sister. She goes into the office and gives this man a $30,000 check to represent him. And her and her brother combined, they tell Klinkerson that, you know, Beth has got this mental illness. She's got psychiatric issues. Don't listen to her. She's crazy. So this is what the guy's been telling the prosecutor, okay? He's been telling the judges, don't listen to her. Anything that she does in this kid's case, ignore it. She didn't hire me. The other members, family members hired me. Now, they did this because Shannon's mother's mom, his grandmother, was a very wealthy attorney back in Kenya, Africa, okay? When she died in 2000, she left an extremely large inheritance for Shannon, which he would have gotten just a few months before he was arrested. Now, they made certain that this kid, they kept Klinkerson on. You know, anytime you have an attorney, in regards to whether you're guilty or not, Michael, he's supposed to represent you. He's supposed to defend you. He kept trying to persuade this kid into taking a plea deal. He kept trying to persuade him to take a he never fought for Shannon's innocence. He never considered any of the nuances in the case that were exculpatory that pointed to the boy's innocence. And they continuously paid this man. They paid him $30,000, and then to keep him on the case, they gave him another $20,000. And Thomas told us yesterday that the guy was waiting for some more money. So they had an invested interest in making certain this kid went to prison so they could steal his inheritance.
No.
Now, that's fact.
I think they got three kids. They just got.
Wow. Okay. Now, the other side of it is that, yeah, Donald Chalk, I mean, it's no mistake that people on the ground down there who were eyewitnesses that night who told cops that they saw a white guy running from the scene, okay, shortly after the shooting. It's no mystery about that. I mean, there's no mistake about that. The cops never put it in their reports, but I've spoken to some of the people who told me what they saw that night, and they told the cops that. They ignored that, and they went right in and honed in on Shannon and locked him up and charged him with this crime. Now, there's a columnist down there in Franklin County. He writes for the Franklin Times. I'm not going to disclose his name, but he's conducting an investigation based on sources that have come to him about this woman, Rhonda McClain, who has a very storied past of her own. She's actually been charged with narcotics, had narcotic charges in the past through the DEA, okay, and she entered an alpha plea where she pretty much, doesn't admit to anything but doesn't plead guilty either. You know, I don't know what the dispositions of her case. We're trying to locate that document now. But the other part of it is her business partner. Now, this woman owns a dentist's office, but she doesn't have a clinical license. So her partner, these prescription drugs and the drug aspect of the case, you know, I mean, he's the only one that could have written prescriptions to get these drugs. All right? So the guy tells me that, what do you hear what I have to say about this guy? So these two, the dentist and the victim, they both have storied pasts, and they probably were being investigated by either the DEA or the State Bureau of Investigations prior to this shooting.
Somewhat of them gets my nose.
So I don't know what the connection is between the sheriff's department and these individuals, but they wanted to get a pawn. They wanted to get somebody to put this crime on because they knew what was going on. Either they were involved, either they were getting some kind of kickback by not locking up the folks that they had on the ground selling drugs down there for them. You know, this story just has so many moving parts, man. It's disturbing.
Man, it's like the perfect storm for this poor kid.
We have a guest on the line. He's the chair of the Mecklenburg County Democratic Party, and our name is Robin Bradford. Robin, are you there?
Yes. This is disturbing.
Oh, that's why you probably
right.
Okay.
It's whole, terrible. The whole, and as I don't know if you were on when I was saying that it's no longer hidden in the closet.
Why are you talking about
these people, when he said they want their country back, they want their country back because they think it's their country. None of them. We're born they have come out of the closet with their pointed hats and their sheets on, and they are just blatantly doing it now. There's no such thing as giving evidence. There's no such thing as planting another gun. There's no such thing as writing stuff up and putting it in the whole court file. They just blatantly say, you ain't going to beat this. And we're going to do it.
I don't agree with you when you say they're coming out the closet. They've been out the closet for a long time. They're no longer wearing pointy white sheets or anything like that. And the sad part is, from the top of the ticket to the judicial races, we have elected these people to represent their interests on the backs of us. And we have a Supreme Court race up for grabs. And if we let these Republicans take this Supreme Court, you will have even more egregious justice throughout North Carolina. So this is, you know, the gentleman said it has moving parts. This has more moving parts than anybody could ever believe, because this is setting precedent on what we can do and continue to do.
You are running for the 92nd district seat, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a regressive party member running against you?
Right. The incumbent is very regressive. He's part of the Tom Tillis Band of Minions, and prescribes to government the way that the Republicans want it to be. And they are on a serious campaign to make sure that they capture every seat and retain every seat by having a majority. And
what's this clown's name?
His name is Charles Jeter.
Jeter, right. That's right, Charles Jeter. And there are some specific things about this Charles Jeter that people need to know.
Yes, there's a lot of things. But one is the fact of the matter that this gentleman, when he was a town council member for Huntersville, wanted to try to get Huntersville opt out as a town against affordable health care. This is the same gentleman who voted against the interest of keeping the airport in Charlotte. This is the same man who continues to support fracking for only personal reasons. This is the same man who continues to say he's a moderate Republican, and there's no such thing. Because if you're moderate, you wouldn't be voting so extreme right. You know, we need to really understand the bigger picture and understand why these things are happening to innocent people throughout North Carolina and across the United States. There's a master plan, and it's being tested and executed here in North Carolina. And if they continue to win, this is the Petri dish, and it will be spreading all over the United States. And the only power that we have is to unite, work together, and vote. Vote these people out of office. Expose them for who they are. And don't get caught up in the rhetoric. Just on the facts alone. Their voting record is public information. Here we have educators in North Carolina who can't get paid. That's ridiculous. My daughter's a first grade teacher, just graduated from Hampton University last May, teaching her first year, and she can't afford to do anything but live with us. And she's looking at other options out of the state. You know, why can't I come home and give my trade, you know, teach children, empower children to move forward in the future, and I can't even afford to live myself. Something is wrong.
Yeah.
It's really wrong.
People like Eric coming to North Carolina and pirating our teachers away with federal money.
It's amazing.
You're running against this clown, Jeter.
Yes.
Why has the Huntersville supported this?
Well, Huntersville is mainly Republican.
He told the listeners.
And he was a familiar name that are indifferent. But people are understanding more. The district goes from Lake Wally to Lake Norman. And my job, I mean, he didn't win by that much. When we ran against each other in 2012, it was only 1.75%. And that's because he had the big backing from the Pope, Art Pope, and the Citizens United, ALEC, you know, all of those extremist groups poured major super PAC money into his campaign. So if we stopped at early voting, yeah, I would have walked away with it. But with the combination of absentee ballots, which the Republicans do an excellent job in making sure that those are turned in, and with the election day vote, that pushed him slightly over the top. So people are voting, but they need to come out 1,000%.
Right.
People are voting, but as the Republicans have saw, our people come out during early voting. So that's why they took away that 1 week of early voting, to discourage people from getting out and participating in the process. You know, he didn't win because he was a better candidate. He won because he had the biggest kitty.
Well, that's what the Republicans have mastered, you know, nationwide. You even look back in the Gore election.
Exactly.
They learned that if you pour enough money in and you depress the vote enough and you steal just enough, if you can get just one vote over the threshold, you win. And then they can claim victory.
Exactly. And that's exactly what happened. So at the end of the day, you know, we as Democrats say we support each other, but we really don't, because we don't put our money where our vote's at. They have did it. We complain that we're basically the middle class, but there are high-dollar Democrats out there who don't support the local races in the manner that they should. And we need to be able to take a page out of the playbook of ALEC and use it against them in the sense that we can do it better. And we saw it in 2008 with the grassroots effort of even people just giving $5 to the Obama campaign. That money added up. So it's not always the big dollar turnaround. It's a combination of both. And within the Democratic Party, if you're a registered Democrat, you need to be donating to those candidates who are in your district and support them 100%. Because they're not going to be able to win these General Assembly seats without that help.
At all.
Okay, well, what would it mean if you went and won? What would that help? What could you change in this outrageous situation we find ourselves?
Well, that's one Republican seat gone. That chips away at the supermajority. And me personally, as a representative, not just for Mecklenburg County, but of the state, I would stand up and champion the causes to progressive government. Even if I'm just the lone voice, you would hear my voice. I would make sure that with Moral Mondays, I wouldn't go home or wherever these General Assembly people go. I would be out there receiving, marching, and talking with the supporters out there. This needs to be a unified effort on both sides. And if you're blessed enough to be elected to represent constituents, that's what you need to be doing. Representing the constituents, not going up there for personal gain. And in respect, I don't care what party you belong to. If you see that we have regressive government, you need to stand up. Give a voice to the people who elected you in and do your job accordingly. That's what you're elected to do. Why do we have people in office? We have people in office to be the voice of the thousands that cannot be heard. So I would start chipping away at regressive government. Even if the bills didn't even leave out of committee, I would be sending to the media outlet, this is the movement we're trying to create within.
pass because that traffic.
Well, the people, it's just like now they keep saying that. Oh well, yeah. We wanted to have this bill. The Republicans right now are saying, well, we have a health care bill. Well, where the hell is it? They have a health care bill in their mind. And speaking, they've been saying that for 60 years. And speaking about having a health care bill, we have coming with us right now a doctor who's going to talk to us about
why
the health care in the what's it called? Kasich or something or other? It's so much better than Obamacare.
It's on my left.
The 45.
I'm going to pass.
So tell us, why does Mitch McConnell, Dr. Gracie Galloway, why does he want to get rid of the Affordable Care Act and replace it with the Kentucky program, which is called Kasich or something? What's it called?
I don't know if that's farther down.
Doctor, can you hear it? It's called KNET.
Is that past conference?
Can you hear it?
Yes.
Oh, I got it. No, I can't hear it. She can't hear it because I knocked her off.
You knocked me off.
That's what to get the compliment.
Yeah, well, hey, that's the only way to get that off is to knock you off. Can't get that anyway. They want to get you so bad. But what I was trying to say is, why is this clown, Mitch McConnell,
want to
get rid of Obamacare and keep his K-net?
Obamacare is working so well in Kentucky that I really, really hope Mitch McConnell continues on this current rant of his about getting rid of it, because he will lose. He will lose big time. I just hope I want him to continue talking about wanting to get rid of it. It's just working very well in Kentucky. Very well.
Yeah, but see, that's not Obamacare. They call that K-net.
Yeah.
I
got to
get
and he wants to get rid of Obamacare, but that automatically means get rid of K-net because they're the same thing. They just changed the name.
It's
a branding. So you were talking about your racism on the ride.
Now,
they so demonize Obama that they can't even use the name. So now they just come up with it's not that, it's Connect.
That's right. Different. Now, you know a little bit of something about racism, just a little bit, Dr. Galloway.
Yeah.
Well, I spoke to
the doctor,
Melvin Williams, earlier today.
Great man.
And he was telling us he can see it.
The content on cat milk. And
he says it is horrible. It is as bad as it was in 64 or before.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sorry.
And Robin is here because I made the statement that they've come out of the closet. Well, and they've been out of the closet. And she's absolutely right. But now
I just love the fact that you keep saying they come out of the closet.
Yeah.
The
thing is that they have been out, but when they came out of the closet, they were just standing around.
Oh God, Mama!
Now they do what the hell they want, and we just had I played a clip about this young lady getting 15 years, Heather Ellis, for jumping the line in Walmart.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Mike. This is the proof of your racism and lack of justice in America and the coming out.
Yes.
They are standing around in Sonic and, Burger Kings and everywhere else in Texas with machine guns. They are bundying themselves all over the ranches out west. While, by the way, waxing philosophical on the one black's better off.
Yes.
Slaves?
They were. Of course they were.
Patient life better.
Of course they were. Because at least they had a roof over their head. You know, that's what they're saying.
They had an easy.
Never mind that the roof had holes in it, and then the walls had also holes in it. They didn't have anything to protect them from the elements, but they were better off. Hey, so
in their world, you can stand around with assault rifles and. Insult the government, talk about secession, and talk about shooting, you know, marshals if they dare come near you. But that's all fine. But if the black person breaks in line at their Walmart, hey, you better throw the hook at them.
Well, this is the same thing.
Exactly.
Let's don't even be an eyewitness to a crime and not get accused of committing the crime. Just listen to this here. Here's a real, you just mentioned his name, a speak of the devil, and I was
I'm wondering, are they better off with their young women aborting their children? Are they better off with the young men in prison? And are they better off with the older people on the sidewalks in front of their government-issued homes with a few children on them? Are they better off? Are they happier than they was when they was in the South in front of their homes with their chickens and their gardens and their children around them and their men having something to do? Are they better off? I'm a wonder. And that's the question I put before the world. Are they better or were they better then? I'm not saying that I thought they should be slaves or I'm not even saying they was better off one way or the other. I'm a wondering if they're better off.
I want to tell you one more thing I know about the Negro. When I go through Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and I would see these little government houses, and in front of that government house, the door was usually open, and the older people and the kids, and there's always at least a half a dozen people sitting on the porch. They didn't have nothing to do. They didn't have nothing for their kids to do. They didn't have nothing for their young girls to do. And because they were basically on government subsidy, and so now what do? They abort their young children. They put their young men in jail because they never learned how to pick cotton. And I've often wondered, are they better off as slaves picking cotton, having family life and doing things, or are they better off under government subsidy? Yeah, they did get no more freedom. They got less freedom.
This thing about slavery and about Negroes, and about government subsidies and the slavery that they put people in when they get them, that needs to be discussed. And America's ready to discuss it. Let's do it.
David?
It's amazing to me. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, it's just I don't know how someone can say something like that and look at himself in the mirror every morning. I don't know how he can sit with a straight face. I mean, I'm sitting here with my jaw hanging open every time I hear that clip. I just shake my head and how in the world? What venom did you grow up on? Okay, what womb did you come out of? That you are so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fight.
All right, put it aside. Go on. Take all your stuff here.
You know, I agree with you with that. But the other thing is, we as African Americans listen to the rhetoric, but we don't have a solid statement to stand up to it. We talk about how bruised and hurt we are, but what is our action on a positive side to counteract that rhetoric? We just talk about how upset we are, but we don't have a statement. We don't say anything other than how appalled, upset. Where did that person crawl from? Which rock they crawled from under? We don't have anything to say back. We don't show the beauty of the progress in our community to counteract that type of statement. We just talk about how sad we are about it. So I think we need to work on a blanket agenda on showing that we're not the dredge of society, that we did more for this country than they have in some cases in building this country and showing how trade would work in this country. We don't talk about those things. As far as being a slave, if you look at the story of the gentleman is called the Prince of Slaves. He was an academic who was caught as a slave and brought here. And through his education, he made more money for his slave owner than the slave owner could make, to where he was more educated that he went to make sure that he was getting a fair price for the rice and the goods and the cotton, because he was a better negotiator than his own master was. So, you know, let's work together to show what was positive, how we grew this country, and how we gave so much. If drugs and experiments weren't infiltrated into our society, into our neighborhoods, then maybe we would have a different view. But our black men were tested and given syphilis just to see how their body would react. Drugs were given out like lollipops in our community. People didn't have jobs. Garbage men weren't paid what they needed to be paid. There's so much history behind the negative campaign of ripping out the souls of people who has always had a vision. But when you create a society of hopelessness, this is what you end up with.
Well, that leads. Go ahead, Grace, before I play this. Go ahead.
Well, you know, Robin, here's what my counter-argument would be, and I understand what you're saying, that we need to change the rhetoric. But my argument to you would be this. We have tried and are continuing to try to change the rhetoric. In point of fact, every time we turn around, you know, we point out, hey, this is what minorities have done for this country. But the problem is, you've got that faction of Clyburn Bundys, and you've got this faction of Ted Cruz's and Marco Rubio's and Mitch McConnell's and idiots like that. You've got that large faction that happen to have the bully pulpit, if you will, who continue to denigrate what the minorities have done for this country. And then you've got that 23 or 24% of the absolute rabid right-wing nut jobs/Tea Party who continue to espouse this rhetoric. So no matter how much, we can point out what we've done, there's going to be that 23-24% of the people that will completely negate it, number one, and number two, we'll have the champions like Clyburn Bundy. We'll have the champions like Stupid Sterling, okay, and the champions like Mitch McConnell and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. They will continue to have those champions. What we've got to do is not so much espouse or broadcast or talk about what we've done. What we need to do is to find a way to negate that group of people, to shut them up. And clearly, us talking about and showing our contributions to this country ain't working, because they're going to ignore it. So somehow or other, I don't know what the answer is at this point in time, but there's got to be a way to truly nullify and negate that small, and it's a tiny minority of people.
I just hope it cuts off right in the middle.
Well, you said it. You said it. It's a tiny minority of people who have the larger soapboxes. My example wasn't just, you know, the end all be all, but we have to be able to have those conversations, and we also need to hold the education system accountable for what they're teaching in these history classes. You know, I've been out of school for many years. I'm quite sure everybody who's on the station right now has been out of school for many years. But there's only like three people that you can relate to in your history teaching that reflects a minority. So we need to make sure that the education system is telling the right information, because racism isn't, you're not born with it. It's something that you acquire being indoctrinated
myself.
Into you to believe that you that
because
others are inferior to you based on race.
Correct.
And if people can't open a book and see, if people can't have conversations about what is good, what has the true history, what has happened, then you don't have a leg to stand on. If you ask the average high school student who is graduating this gym, what do you think about slavery? Oh, did that really happen, or that was unfortunate? They're so desensitized to the history and the blight on American society that they don't even see the relevance. So when these conversations are being had and these people are standing on their very large soapboxes, they're not talking about me. I was never a slave. They're not talking about me because I don't consider myself a nigger. I live in a predominantly white community. My mother and father are doctors and professors, and we don't really subscribe to that nonsense because we're better off now.
Which is why we need to elect Robin Bradford to the legislature, because we need voices like that who are, you know, who are cogent and knowledgeable about our history so that they don't change our history book. So we need to elect Robin to the legislature. There you go.
Well, I appreciate that so much, Doctor. And those who would like to join the campaign, please, RobinBradfordNC.com. You know, I need your support on all levels, financial, spreading the word. We got to make a change. There's so many good people who are running for office who are cut off at the kneecaps because they can't afford to stay in the race.
I want you to also hear, because this ties in why we can't go, it seems, out and find out what is going on is because of the people in office. Just listen to this.
Yes. No, you're right. But, you know, I'm glad that,
many
Michael, you have...
Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
There it is.
Look,
there it is.
I think that touches on something.
And before these young ladies kill all the men on the show, David, what do you have to say about what these two young ladies were saying?
Well, you know, I actually enjoy what Robin Bradford was saying, Michael, because, and I just want to expound on what she was talking about a little bit more in depth. What are we going to do to counter this kind of rhetoric? I mean, this guy's talking about whether we're in better position now, socially, economically, whether when we were slaves or when, you know, now when we're sitting on the corners or our men
right.
have nothing to do. The guy's got a strong argument. You know, although it comes from a racist mindset, he's got a strong argument. I mean, our community, a lot of the criticism that we get from different factions, political factions in this country now, are kind of predicated on truth. Because what are our young people doing? Okay, what are we doing to kind of change the political landscape in this country? You know, I mean, we're not progressive. I mean, you guys are just talking about education. Robin, you know, talked about, you know, her daughter couldn't get a job or the job that she does have as a teacher, she's not being paid, you know, and everything. And you have to tie all that together, because as long as we continue to be, you know, non-active and not participatory in elections and the kinds of ills that happen within our communities, then we're going to see these kinds of things to continue. You know, I mean, if you have a situation where school teachers aren't getting paid in certain communities, they're going to go and they're going to lobby and they're going to get a hell of a collective bargaining agreement the next time, you know, that particular legislation comes around. You know, they're going to get a good collective bargaining agreement. You know, in our community, we don't care. You know, my old lady teaches high school. She's got like 3,700 students that she sees a week.
And when the parent-teacher conference comes around, she's lucky if she sees one or two parents of these kids. Okay, and I'm talking about, you're talking about predominantly minority community, high school. You know, so, you know, Robert brings an excellent point. What are we going to do to counter this rhetoric? You know, I'm sick of hearing people talk about, you know, racism and, you know, liking us to us being in a better position when we were slaves as opposed to now. You know, as long as we continue to be non-participatory in our own plight, you can't expect any other politicians, for whether Republican or Democrat, of other ethnicities to help us. Okay, we have to start launching grassroots efforts to try to change our condition. Until we do that, we're going to be in the same situation. So, I applaud Robin Bradford for what she said about that. Now, as far as what Doc was saying, you know, I agree with that, too, to an extent. You know, but, you know, if people aren't coming out to vote, you know, to get elected officials like Robin Bradford in office, I mean, what good is it? I mean, we're still going to be in the same situation. The Republicans are going to be there again. They're going to win in North Carolina again if people aren't coming out to vote. You know, at the very minimum, this racist sheriff in Franklin County, okay, Sheriff Jerry Jones, he cannot be reelected. You know, and we're just going to have to wait and see in November in the primary, in the general election, whether or not this guy gets back in office. But I guarantee you, Michael, he's going to win the election because the lack of participation by people in the Democratic Party as well as in our community.
I agree with you. Thank you for that.
Because
people need to hear it.
Thomas?
Oh, I was just going to say that this is, and I think David touched on it, one thing that bothers me about the program, let's put the macro picture, not the micro picture. You know, be Neil deGrasse Tyson for a minute and look at Cosmos level. One of the problems in this country, and the reason we have this, look across the board, everything we're talking about, you know, education, lack of jobs, lack of opportunity, lack of justice, it all is actually related. And the problem is we've allowed ourselves, and I hate to sound like a, you know, anti-corporatist, but I'm just going to say there is big money interest, and there are people. And the people of this country that have allowed the big money interest to take over. And the big money interest takes over by dividing and conquering. And we've allowed that to happen. So now that's why we get these little arguments. Oh, it's the Mexican immigrant. Oh, it's the black person. Oh, it's the uneducated. It's the poor. It's the gay marriage thing. Yep. Those are all distractions across the board. You know, it's people versus vested interests. If you do not get together, like David said, and start voting and start changing your world, it ain't going to get any better. There's no change. Look, we have a problem. You know, as you were talking about, how do people even define slavery or racism? There's been an ongoing case. We can't even define science. We can't even define facts. You know, it started like climate warming, but now they've gone after everything because it breaks down common knowledge, and it breaks down common resistance, and it breaks down common anything that holds us side, any kind of common bond. If you break that, then you can divide and conquer. There's no leg to stand on. You know, you can sit there and say, well, maybe Franklin's good for you. You know, I mean, come on.
Right.
You can just do anything you want if you break down society and its common core of understanding how society acts. That's why hate groups can flourish. You know, that's why we can carry guns everywhere and shoot anything we want, you know, when it's ridiculous. And it absolutely connects to society being broken down. And in defense, one of the problems with voting and science voting is that we're freaking tired. We work all the time. We usually have two or three jobs and families to take care of.
and there's virtually no time or energy left to do anything else. And that is by design. That's what keeps voting down. And so that's when
Early voting and all that kind of stuff, helping people out. If you can go to vote after church, or you can go to vote a week before, or you can go to vote whenever, you know, at multiple locations, that's a help. So that's why vested corporate interests go after them every time they get in power. They restrict that. You know, let's make it older, let's take that right away.
Because that's how they win. It's a divine curse. All the other stuff is symptomatic of that. When you have no education, and you have no jobs, you have extreme poverty and extreme chaos inside cities and in communities, and everything is falling apart. And it's very easy to say, well, you know, you don't have any money because of the Mexican area. You don't have any money because of the guy over there. And that's when all the fear and hatred and all that comes up. But it's all symptomatic of one thing, and that's divided.
David, what do you, how do you see this abominable situation in Franklin County? How does it sit right now?
Well, you know, it appears to be just in plain sight from my involvement in Shannon Modi's criminal case, Michael. It appears to be a network of good old boys that have lasted since eternity. You know, you talk about the involvement of potentially judges, prosecutors, and the sheriff department down there. As I alluded to earlier, I guess the start to kind of change the climate down there would be to get rid of that one sheriff. And ironically, you know, he had actually been voted out the last time. But
yeah,
this other sheriff, Sheriff Green, was actually charged with stealing some money, you know, that came up missing. And from my understanding, from everything I've read about that particular case, is that he couldn't prove that he didn't take it. Okay? And then the county commissioners re-put this guy, Jerry Jones, back in the office. Okay? They were supposed to have had a special election back in January, and that never transpired. All right. So when you have this kind of political dynamics going on, and the people in that town are not outraged, and they're not marching in the streets and demonstrating, and you know, advocating for change and advocating their total disdain for what has occurred, you know, I mean, what can you do? I mean, what can you do? The guy got voted out. You know, they sabotaged the other guy's office, and then they put him back in. Now, what's going to happen in the general election in November if Jerry Jones loses again? And what are they going to do? They're going to sabotage the new guy again? You know, so Franklin County has a horrible history. And as we discussed before, if you look up habeas corpus, the habeas corpus, all of the case law on that have all derived out of Franklin County.
Right.
You know, it seems
absolutely
like when you get locked up down there, they hold you forever, and they don't care what the government says about it either.
Well, that's what
Hey, now, David, that's hard to prove because all the records are very thoroughly.
Chairman Galloway, who is the, what district is Franklin County in?
Down in the 9th District, Michael.
I think it's the 9th District because it's out there. You know, with the redistricting, I believe it's the 9th. I'm still getting used to the district. I don't think it's completely in the 9th. It might be carved up. So, you know, hey.
But you know what? Doc's right, Michael. It is carved up. You got one part of it that's in like the 9th district, one part's in the 17th district, and one part that's in the 11th district. Okay? We just went over that when we were trying to find out when they changed the judges, the Superior Court judges, you know, where they all were going.
Chops
up that electric ice bike.
It's amazing.
I mean, how many things
can go
so badly in one county?
When you look at your old boy networking addiction,
yeah,
it's got a picture of Franklin County.
I mean, this is just unbelievable. It is unbelievable. And, you know, and I tell the story, I don't know if I said it in the air before, I was going to, when I was the state district chair for the African-American Caucus, I went to all these districts. I drove more than close to 4,000 miles up and down and created almost 17 districts myself. Spent the weekend in these districts, District 3, District 7, District 9. I'm in District 12 now, but I was in District 8 then. I drove in these little hobo towns, Johnson County. I was down there, Franklin County, New Hanover County. I was in all these places created.
Hey, Mike, it is lucky as hell. You're New York.
I'm telling you.
And you were ever allowed back on the
freeway. But the thing was, it's so funny. I went down there and I took my wife with me. The only time I think I took her with me, we spent the night down there. I used to spend the weekend and come back like at least a Friday night, Saturday, or Saturday night, Sunday. So when we got down there, it started, we went over the railroad tracks. You know, you always go over the railroad tracks. Anyway, so I went over the railroad tracks.
There's
Hoboken town. GPS took me right to the door. And they were all waiting in there for me. Oh, you know, it was like something out of a movie. And I'm saying, I'm so hungry. Can we go? I said, oh, no, we'll go out with you. We'll show you where to go. I said, what? I mean, I saw a couple of dollars here.
I can find my way around.
No, no. So we went.
Oh, so Mike, you weren't even light enough to pass, huh?
They were doing it just in case. Hey, so the thing was that
what we now know, that's probably a damn good thing.
That's right. So the thing was, we spent the night. I forgot some one of these motels. It was a nice place, a Holiday Inn or something. Hey, not a motel, Holiday Inn. So anyway, the next day, they called me before I got up and said, look, we'll meet you. We're going to take you to breakfast, you and your wife. I mean, it's like they were guards.
We went to the safe house.
It was this restaurant. And there was, it was supposed to be white, black, or anything. You know, they said, oh, this is the best place in town. I said, is it the only place? No, there's still a place, but this is nice. Went there. I start. That same day, 12 o'clock, between 12 and 4, they formed a caucus. And my wife said, after we did all the talking, we were saying, oh, we're going to go to dinner. My wife says, I don't like this place. I don't want to stay. She's from Charleston, South Carolina. She said, don't you feel? I said, feel what?
Her spider sense was taken,
right,
man.
So, so when we left, she said, don't ever come back down here by yourself again. I said, look, what am I doing? 67 great people. No. She said, that's a racist town. I said, how do you know? No one said that. She said, yes. But I saw them. So, hey, is that obvious? It's got to be.
It's got to be. Look at what's happening to the kids.
Well, if you got a sign posted on Route 1 going up that way that says you're in the heart of Klan country, welcome to North Carolina, okay, I think that's pretty obvious, Michael.
Yeah. Doesn't get much clearer than that.
All right, we must have drove down the other way because I never saw that sign. But I did see the sign, and I think you sent it to me. I think I posted it on the website. But, yeah, welcome to Klan County, Franklin County, something. What's it say there again, David?
No, it says you're in the heart of Klan country. Welcome to North Carolina. Okay, it used to say welcome to Johnston County. You're in the heart of Klan country.
Right. Well, so Robin, have you, as the chair of the party, seen a difference since you've been chair? Or since you were, not since you were chair, before you got chair, maybe 2 years ago. Have you seen, because I have not seen, but I have heard now from people of a change.
You have to qualify that statement. When you talk about change, are you talking about that more old, high-dollar white people are coming back supporting the county party? I mean, what changes are you talking about?
Outright racist change instead of the quiet, just in your face.
I'm from New York like you, and I've been here 15 years. And I call this, you know, the plantation of Peyton Place. We have African-Americans, black, whatever you want to call yourself, people of color, who understand the dynamics, and they are publicly cool with it. Whatever they talk about behind closed doors are one thing, but when it's on the public, it's blatant racism, and they're just like, hey, 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 and they keep going on. I don't understand that. But as chair of the party,